back at the home port.
One lived on board all times of that ship. Yeah. If you were married, you probably rented a house in the locally.
Would the married sailors be, married officers be paid more than the bachelor?
You know, I don't believe they were. I think we just got the same pay.
Must have been awfully tough to get by.
No, yeah. It wasn't. Because later on I was married. And we lived reasonably comfortably. We weren't well-to-do, but we were reasonably well off. We certainly didn't live
In poverty.
Poverty. Yeah. Now, you see, the reason the pay was so good for everybody was to ensure the loyalty and integrity of the employees of the customs. Mm-hmm. Because there were lots of opportunities for graft when was constantly being exposed to this. And so, in order to stave off temptation, you were paid very well, mm-hmm. and the conditions were good. But if there was the least whiff of genuine corruption, you were on the next boat out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And with no appeal or no hearing, you just went. How's that? So, no, it was a very good life.
Mm-hmm.
And good people. My colleagues on board and the other officers would be almost any nation Chinese.
Would you have Chinese officers?
Oh, yes, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Chinese officers, too. We had started by then our own college to train Chinese officers. And
was this service? It sounds like you had your own college. It must have been very extensive.
Oh, it was. It was big. Gosh, I don't know what the numbers were, but don't forget that every port had a staff of customs people, administrative staff, what was known as the outdoor staff, the people like the ones here who go and check on stuff coming in and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the marine staff, running the fleet, that element of the fleet. So in each port, even the smallest ports, the Chinese customs was quite an element of the community.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big service.
Did you run into any conflicts with the Chinese Navy, aside from the opium?
No conflicts with the Chinese Navy at all.
Was that a very professional service, the Chinese Navy?
Their ships were very, very old. They had a naval college, and they sent officers went to Staff College and for a professional specialist training to the UK and to America and to France.
Mm-hmm. Were they still following a policy of copying and buying British ships?
Oh, no, they were building their own. Yeah. Yeah, they had shipyards there. But they were old ships, they had nothing very much. They were a hopeless match for the Japanese. Yeah. When the war finally came, it was just hopeless. They had nothing of that quality, no really modern ship, or very few.
Yeah. It was sort of like 1894 all over again.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
So, sounds like an exciting life.
Yeah, well. So, no, it suited me down to the ground. I loved it.
Yeah.
I liked China.
You like China?
Yeah, I liked it. Mm-hmm. Liked the life there. Mark, it was the bad old days when foreigners had all sorts of privileges. There was a thing called extraterritoriality. In other words, one was not subject to prosecution in the Chinese courts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in practice, what would happen if you ever got into a situation where you were liable for prosecution, you were just kicked out of the country and put on the next boat out.
So you could kill a Chinese person?
Well, no, that'd be different than anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, in that case, of course, you'd be prosecuted in the national courts or the consular courts. And then shipped off probably to your own country for jail.
Mm-hmm.
That was at the start. That changed during the time that I was there, and foreigners all lost these indemnities.
How long were you
there? I was there 10 years.
Really?
Well, nearly 10 years, until the beginning of the war.
Did they have a system of rank, and did you put that
rank? Oh, yes, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Were you commanding by the end of the
year? Oh, yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah.
What kind of ship did you have under your command?
Well, I started off with a little itsy-bitsy thing, about 90 feet long, and progressed on up to fair-sized things. Things about the size of the Coast Guard ships and oceanographic ships that you see here, around here.
What sort of armaments would you have on it?
Oh, they all had, well, they had a couple of small guns, about 6-pounders,
mm-hmm.
and then automatic weapons. There was some conflict from time to time, a particularly valuable cargo or something like that.
A lot of piracy, I suppose.
Yeah, there was a lot of piracy. And there was one amusing episode where word came in that a cargo junk had been pirated and was lying in a cove, an island offshore. And would we go and rescue the crew of the pirated cargo junk? So off we went, the ship I was in. And at that time the pirate disappeared. But it turned out that the junk was a well-known smuggler that we had caught from time to time. You seized their ships, but you never did anything about the smugglers. You just turned them loose, so they went back and got the junk and did it again. But after they had been pirated, the first thing they entered their minds was to go appeal to the Chinese customs for help.
Mm.
It was a very amiable thing. In fact, we used to recruit seamen from the smugglers.
They were good seamen, I suppose, weren't they?
Very good seamen. That was a very amiable thing. But now and again, you'd have a bit of a punch-up. We had casualties.
Yeah.
Enough to give a spice of knife, but not enough for a young man to feel it was really dangerous.
Yeah.
But it was good stuff. There was a lot of small boat work. For instance, an informer would report that a cargo was due into a place up the coast, so the ship would steal out there at night and drop a couple of boats, which would then go in at night and wait at the entrance to the harbour for the smuggler to arrive in
mm-hmm.
the early dawn, that kind of thing. Lots of boarding at sea in heavy weather, this kind of thing. Excellent. Seafaring. Good life.
Mm-hmm.
Good pay, good conditions. Fun ashore. The small places in that way were much more fun than the bigger places. Because in a place like Amoy, there was a relatively small community. Business people and foreigners. And Chinese business people. And you belonged to the local clubs, and there was games, social do's,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
But you kept dances. Mostly to yourself, I take it. To
foreigners, yes, you tended to keep to yourself. Not necessarily because one didn't want contact with the Chinese, but the Chinese themselves didn't care too much for contact with foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
I
suppose if a Chinese woman married a white man, it would be lessening of her social status in the eyes of other Chinese,
yes.
wouldn't it?
And in the customs, anyway, I don't know about other firms. You were not allowed to marry a Chinese woman. And this was a condition imposed by the Chinese themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because they felt that if you did that, you could be exposed to pressure from your in-law family
mm-hmm.
for corruption or something like that. So that if you married a Chinese woman, you were automatically fired.
You said you married. When did that happen?
Oh, that was towards the end of my time there. And, I'd been on leave and spent a lot of time here. This is when I first came here in 1938. And I stayed with relatives in the States, and I went to England for a short time. And met my wife there. And then I went back to China, and she came out later, and we were married in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm. And what did she do in Shanghai?
We weren't stationed there. We were just married there. I was stationed in a place called Fuzhou.
Mm-hmm.
So we went down to Fuzhou, and this was at the time when the Japanese-Chinese war was in full swing, and the coast was blockaded by the Chinese Japanese Navy.
Mm-hmm.
There were no communications, no airlines, no roads, no railways.
Were you immune from the Japanese, being the international?
Partly so. You wouldn't be killed by the Japanese normally, unless you had actually been resisting in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't attack foreigners deliberately. This was before, long before, of course, the Japanese 1941.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we were afflicted with all the restrictions that the war placed on communication, that kind of thing. So we were in Shanghai for a little while waiting for a blockade runner, and finally we got one that scuttled from port to port and just steamed at night and landed us about 30 miles north of Fuzhou. We walked over the hills to get into Fuzhou. We were there for several months and the war came along.
Mm-hmm.
By then I was ashore. And we had to get out the same way.
How did your wife react to all this? It must have been quite a departure from England.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Yeah.
God, it was a bit alarming for a new husband, wondering what the hell was the reaction going to be. So we didn't discuss the matter. I thought it best not to push the subject. But it happened. She took it all in her stride and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, what had she done before she met you?
She'd been a matron in a private school.
Mm-hmm. And did she teach at Fuzhou?
No. So it took us a long time to get out. And then took us a long time before we could get a passage from... We got out as far as Shanghai, then had to wait until we could get a passage to Canada.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Canada, not to Hong Kong or...
Oh, no.
Singapore,
yeah,
or something. No. Your intentions were to come to Canada at that time?
Yeah. Because the... Although... I had relatives here, and I would have come here anyway. In spite of the fact that I had been a British reservist, I'd been a midshipman and a sub-lieutenant in the British Naval Reserve, but I had quit that, I'd resigned from that, so I had no obligations.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody with British associations of any kind, either... See, at that time, Canadians were British subjects before the Citizenship Act.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody like that was encouraged to stay in China. They didn't want people with British background of any kind to leave China, partly to maintain a foothold in the Chinese scene for after the war,
mm-hmm.
and partly, presumably, for the defense of Hong Kong. Well, after sitting listening to the radio, when it wasn't jammed by the Japanese in Fuzhou, I couldn't stand it any longer, and since we were the only place would have us with either Australia or Canada, and as I had relatives here and associations with Canada, I came here anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And joined the reserve.
Well, tell me, did you give any thought of going to, say, Hong Kong or Singapore?
That wasn't the war then, you see. This was before 1941, so mm-hmm. the Japanese weren't taking part. There was no point in going there.
Had you spent any time in either of those two cities?
Yes, we used to refit in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you think of the defences at the time?
Oh, they were ridiculous. I mean, it was indefensible. There was no conceivable way it could have been defended.
Mm-hmm.
Singapore was different. Presumably, one thought about it at all. One assumed that, well, I don't think, it certainly wouldn't have occurred to anybody like myself that it could be attacked from overland.
Mm-hmm.
The assumption was it would be attacked from the sea, and the defences from the sea seemed to be reasonably adequate.
Mm-hmm.
But Hong Kong never was defensible.
No, it's just too large an area and too few troops and no defensible positions.
That's right, yeah.
And once they were forced onto the island, I think it was a lost cause.
Oh, then it was a lost cause. I mean, if they'd done nothing else, they could have starved it into submission in no time at all.
Yeah. There's no help on the way and there's no possible...
No possible way of getting help.
Yeah. Well, so now that we've got you to Canada, I think we're going to stop the tape because we're going to ring at the end.
All right. Okay.